Coach Your Brains Out is brought to you by our wonderful patrons. To support the show, visit patreon.com/coachyourbrainsout. This is part two of our conversation with Greg Vernovich.
Welcome to Coach Your Brains Out, the show that explores learning from the top minds in volleyball and beyond. With your hosts, John Mayer, Billy Allen, Andrew Fuller, and Nils Nielsen.
Well, now we're going to shift into culture. So how would you describe the culture you attempt to create when coaching at the college or professional levels?
Team. I'm a team guy. I love working with teams. Every year you have a different group of individuals that walk in the gym. And one of my goals always has been and always will be getting all those individuals. You have all this individual talent and greatness around you. How can you get that group of individuals to work together as a team?
Team's a good word. So I got to be a part of one of your teams and I was a red shirt. So I didn't compete in matches for good reason. I wasn't very good. So when I was at, you were coaching at Pierce College, a junior college in the San Fernando Valley. So I barely played in practice. I think I was the third or fourth string setter. Never touched the court in a match, but it was one of my favorite seasons. I competed in all my years of volleyball. Can you take us through some of your memories of your time at Pierce? And I don't know if you remember that team specifically at all.
Oh yeah, I remember that team, and I remember you, and you were good. You are good, and you were good. And
I got better.
You know, that team we had that year was an exceptional group of athletes, and probably sticks out as one of all the teams I've ever had the opportunity to work with have been great athletes. I've been just so lucky and honored to work with the people that I've been able to work with. That particular team, they just hit the ground running, and that's top to bottom, including you. Didn't really have to encourage too many people to want to work hard, and that team came together. We had a pretty good year the year before. We won the state championship. We had a few players return. So that the culture of teamwork and the standard that we had set, not only the year before, but for decades before, before I got there, it was an incredible coach working there named Ken Stanley. They call him Big Daddy. And, he created what was going on in there. And I just happened to be able to come in and work with that and build off of that. And I am so absolutely proud of that team that you are part of, and the team before that that I had the opportunity to work with. They hit the ground running, and you just knew you had something special when you got in the gym. And I didn't have to do, I don't think, that much encouraging other than, to make sure that I kept that standard. The pressure was on the coaching staff to keep the standard and set that bar higher and higher. And the team just continued to meet that bar. And so we just kept putting the bar higher. And I suppose we could probably still be in that gym and we'd just still be raising that bar. And I don't know who we'd have to find to compete against, but we'd find somebody.
That team never lost. So I don't know, people would stop showing up, I think. But, that team was, again, of all the teams I've been around, was the closest I've seen a team to playing to its, whatever, its true potential, to the best it could be. And, I mean, you said the team hit the ground running, but I think you also, I agree, there's a special group, but a lot of it was to do with you. You squeezed, everything out of us. It was a high demanding, it was an intense culture. I guess, do you think that sort of environment, that sort of intensity would work with, this phrase of today's athlete, which is a terrible phrase, but yeah, I guess, what are your thoughts on that?
My first thought on that is I want every, so you have the team and you have all these individuals that are part of the team, and it's the same thing in the mountains. I want to see, one of my great joys as a guide or an expedition leader or as a coach is to see someone reach their true or top potential, mm-hmm. and to see them compete at that level. And that starts in the gym practicing. That just doesn't show up in the championship game or in some random match that you play during the season. That is formed, that is created in the practice gym. And there's nothing, and that's why that team is so special to me, because all those individuals, I honestly felt at one point in time or another, whether it was in that season or later in life, as so many of you went on to play at Division I schools, and then beyond that, you take that team, John, and you run down the roster and think about and talk about what that group of athletes are doing today. Number one, they got great families. They have kids, and they're just awesome human beings doing the right thing. So many of you guys ended up playing. Yeah, I'm not going to say I'm proud that you sat on the bench, but you redshirted, and so you couldn't play in matches. But did you sit on the bench ever after that season anywhere?
I got to play a lot after that, but yeah, I mean Clint Coe was also on the bench. We ended up playing Division I and playing professionally, so it was a deep team.
Yeah, deep team, and on up and down that roster. Just such a joy to see people play at their potential and reach the highest level at that point in time of their careers that they could. And then to see them all play at that level together, I had the best seat in the house during any match, because we did all the work in practice. And then during the match, I would just sit on the bench and, say, wow, okay, what are we going to do now? And, just watch everybody take care of business and work together and communicate. And one of my favorite players on that team was a guy named Eddie Stanislawski. Mm-hmm. And Eddie, he held people to a level. And I always enjoyed having Eddie on the court. And there was another guy on the court named Casey, who also did that. And he, these guys might not have been the best players on the court, but they held everybody else on the court accountable for what they needed to do. And hey, every now and then, as Coach Wooden would say, everybody needs a pat on the back. Some guys need it a little lower and a little harder. And those guys would pat people on the back, and then we had you guys on the bench, and we commonness of purpose. That team had commonness of purpose, like a few other teams I've seen and had the opportunity to work with, Dane and Eric, obviously being one of them that comes to mind. When you get a team playing at their maximum potential and they have commonness of purpose, which is winning, it is such a joy to be in that environment, and it starts in the gym. So will it work? This is a long answer, and I apologize. So will it work with your quoted today's athletes? What are today's athletes? What are today's climbers? Everybody's an individual, and you have to approach each athlete individually, and how you coach one person may not be how you want to coach the other person. And that's why you have a team of coaches. I've been in situations where I can tell you, I know exactly what I need to tell you and what I need to see technically out of you, but I just can't seem to get through to you. So I'll turn to my teammate, my coach mate, my assistant, or my head coach, and I'll say, here's what I want to see Billy do. I just can't seem to get through to him. Can you go and work with him on this technique and see if you can get through to him? you'll go over there, and in about two sentences, you'll have gotten through what I've taken paragraphs and beaten my head against the wall to try to get through to this athlete. But how you said it clicked. And I've seen coaches get so frustrated with their athletes because their athletes just aren't, quote unquote, getting it. And all of a sudden that athlete gets put on the bench and forgotten about. And maybe it's just, maybe we got to look at ourselves in the mirror as coaches. Maybe we're just not using the right phrases or techniques, or maybe it's just not getting through to them. So, you know, put your ego in check and get somebody else to work with that athlete. And maybe, just maybe, they're going to get through to them. Going back to Pierce Community College, I had such a great staff, and we were all so different in ways that we, presented certain topics. And I just loved it. I just loved it. It was awesome. And I do the same thing in the mountains as I do in the gym.
Those were lots of good memories. One of my memories is setter training. So the setters, I think I was the four string setter, but it was still the deal. You'd get up and we'd have, I think practice was at 6 a.m. and we'd do setter training at 5 a.m. or something like that. And so I'd set my alarm for 4 a.m. but then I'd wake up every half hour worried that I didn't set the alarm right or that I missed it. And just freaking out all night, because partially I didn't want to be late. I wanted to get better and I was fired up, but also there was just high standards for showing up on time and showing up ready to go. So that's, I think, one example of some of your non-negotiables. But I guess what are other like non-negotiables in your team culture?
That's my number one. Be early to be on time when time is involved. I'm big on being on time. If you can't hold yourself to the standard to be on time, something as simple as that, how can we count on you to take that area of the court when the game is on the line or the match is on the line? So that has got to be my number one, I'd say maybe pet peeve, but it's also, part of the team culture. And, we only get so much time to be in the gym together. So let's take advantage of that time and work on what we need to work on. Some other values. I'm a huge technical guy, and having a standard base. There are so many, the game is evolving. It's still evolving. And there's so many interesting and fascinating and awesome things happening in the game of volleyball, the men's game, the women's game, the beach game, all of them. And it's awesome to see these things. However, I will say that you have to have that base. You have to have the basic technical skills. And from there, you let great players be great. And, there's a million thing coaches out there that'll say, I'm totally fine if somebody uses one hand to dig the ball. Okay, that's fine. I'm that guy that says, we're going to practice digging with two hands, and then when it comes down to it, and we're in the heat of battle, if you go and you run 30 feet and you lay it out and you just manage to get one hand on it, but we got the ball back over the net. Hey, we can let great players be great at that point in time. Or, if you got your teammate up at the net blocking and, we want that guy to get shoulders straight over the net and we're going to practice perfect blocking, but he reaches outside of his body and Kongs that ball and you guys win the championship off of Kong. I don't think anybody's going to go to the bench and go, dude, that was the worst technique ever. you got the point. And so that's one of my pet peeves. I've always started practice perfect technique, practice perfect form. That's why we had setter training. That's why we had middles over here on this court. We want to practice, perfect distance, be up early, stay off the net. We want to be perfect there. We want to practice passing and practice off a spin serve where it's right is wrong, left is right. We get in that groove and then we can play with that outside of that. But I would say be early to practice, get in the gym on time. And then, you know, the standard is practice perfect technical skills, and then you can work off of that and become great on other things.
Vern, it's I wasn't part of it, but it's really fun to hear you guys talk and reminisce about your teams, and you speak so fondly about those groups. I guess, how do you view the coach-player relationship? I know some people, the instinct is to be buddies, especially if you're a younger coach. Other times it's more a detached professional. I guess, where do you fall on that, and how do you see that relationship working?
Billy, I think you were at Northridge, weren't you, when I was at Pierce? And I'm fairly certain I was trying to figure out how to get you out of Northridge and into Pierce. That might be something you never knew.
I would have been the fifth string setter. Geez.
No.
I don't think so. You probably would have enjoyed. I mean, based on what you got going on the beach and how hard I see you play and things like that, I think you probably would have fit in pretty good. And then your question. I'm sorry, I missed your question. I was thinking about you at Northridge and thinking, I wanted you in Pierce.
No, just that. What are your thoughts on the player coach dynamic and that relationship?
Oh, well, it depends on what level we're talking about, you know, but first and foremost, you know, the coach sets the standard and sets the expectations, is a mentor, is a role model. The coach is part of the team and is part of the face of the team. And so I think you got to be professional at all times. And you have to do what's right, and you have to conduct yourself professionally inside and outside the gym, because you never know who's watching. And I think that's very important, and that's for any level. In terms of whether, I mean, I was friends with my guys that I coached in the Olympics in the 2000 and 2004 games. Dane is, I coached him. But we were roommates in college, and we're friends, and we're very good friends even to this day. However, when we got on the sand, the friendship was always there, but we were there for a reason, and we needed to accomplish things. And every now and then, I wanted to see certain things, and I would, I had to have that freedom to put my friendship with him aside and say, Dane, here's what I'm looking for. And this is the reason why I'm looking for it. And so we're going to do this again until we get it right. And, and Dane being the great competitor and athlete that he is, as long as coaches need to have good reasons to ask players what they want from them. And so Dane was fantastic. Why he would say, and players today and today's players, John, to go back players today ask why, and they can ask why, because answers are at their fingertips on their phones, on their computers, answers are right there. So you need to have good reasons for asking your players to do things. And Dane was great at that. And he challenged me as a coach. Okay. Why do you want me to do that? And I think that's important. I think you have to be able to separate being a friend to your athletes and being a coach. If you're in club, you're absolutely a mentor and a coach, and you shouldn't be best friends with your athletes for obvious reasons. In college, hey, there's a time and a place to celebrate. And, we're not in college anymore. And I don't even know how kids celebrate in college anymore. But, we'll celebrate on the sand. We'll celebrate in the gym. And, and then the kids, you've set that example to do what's right. And when they go out and celebrate with their friends and families, you count on them to celebrate doing what's right. But I think there's got to be a line in the sand, so to speak, that you don't cross in terms of being friends with your players. You know, you got to separate that, I believe.
Can you talk a little more about Dane and Fenoy and what made them so successful? I know you guys weren't, by far, as I remember, weren't like the favorites going into Sydney. Like I said, what made them so special? How did you get the most of them at the right time?
Oh, they were the hardest working two people I have ever had the honor to be around. And their success in the Olympics, they were seeded ninth going into the 2000 games, but their success in the Olympics started long before that. They started the momentum, and I had the opportunity to start working with them. I didn't travel with them internationally like a lot of coaches are able to do nowadays. So they would travel around the FIVB tour, and they started having success before the Olympics. And if I remember correctly, I believe they might have been playing in Belgium maybe when it really started clicking. And they needed to get a great finish, I believe, in Belgium, and I could be wrong, in order to qualify for the Olympics, and they got that. And other than the fact that they trained harder than anybody on the beach, in the gym, they studied their game and other people's game, and then they had a chip on their shoulder. They were seeded ninth going in. Hydra and Wong were seeded higher than them. And then Karch and Adam Johnson, the USA's, you know, obviously you have to love Karch, you know, and he's had so much success on the beach and in indoor. If you're an American volleyball fan and you aren't pulling for Karch, hey, I don't know what to tell you. You should be. He's proven that he's been successful. And so I think the American fan base probably wanted to see Karch and Adam in the Olympics. And so now you got these guys named Dane Blanton and Eric Fenoy Mawana getting in there instead of Karch and Adam Johnson. And I think Dane and Eric probably had a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. And you don't want all athletes to go into a competition with a chip on their shoulder, but you want those guys to have a chip on their shoulder because boy, oh boy, did it help us. And, you know, when we got to the Olympics and it was all business all the time. And, we had great people around us, and we just got down to business and practiced hard and studied hard. And yeah, next thing you know, they were standing on the podium, and I got to see a couple of guys play some of the best volleyball to this day that I've ever seen two guys play.
Cool.
It's one of the, I think, most incredible Olympic stories, what they accomplished, what they did. No one saw it coming, and I don't think a lot of people realize how big a role you played in it, but it's a pretty cool story.
They did it. And I can tell you there were at least three guys who saw it coming. And
yeah, the only three, I think.
You know, don't stand on the tracks with the train coming through. And I'll tell you, the friends and family that were in the stands, they saw it coming. And boy, oh boy, what an incredible, incredible experience.
So who were some of, who have been some of your coaching mentors, and what role have they played in developing the leader that you are now?
Every coach and every player and teacher that I've ever had the opportunity to be around have been my mentors. You know, in particular, Marv Dunphy, who was my coach in college, the name speaks for itself. Ken Stanley, Big Daddy at Pierce, absolutely fantastic coach. But as great a coach as Ken Stanley and Big Daddy is, he's an even better person. And what I learned from Big Daddy in terms of being a good person just rings in my head. And to this day, I want to be a better person every single day I wake up. And if I stumble here and there or do something not the way I should, he's right there in my ear. Alan Knipe at Long Beach State, a great friend, an unbelievable coach, good mentor, fun to be in the gym with because of the different thought processes we both had. And another guy by the name of Andy Reid, who is retiring this year from teaching in high school and has been involved in the game of volleyball long before I have been. And he coached in high school. He's coached at every level. And again, a different style of coaching and always challenging me as a coach to be better and bringing different things to the table, and just so much fun to be around. Mark Lee, Charles Gage, great, great coaches, great people to be around. And then every single player I ever had the opportunity to work with in the gym, I learned something from them. You know, there's a player that I had the opportunity to work with when he was in high school, and got to work with him again in college, and then got to watch him beyond college. And his name is David Lee. And arguably one of the best blockers. He was the best middle blocker in the world, they said. And I got to work with him when he was in high school and then watch him progress. And the things that I got to see this athlete do in the gym, on the court, and then by the time he was a senior, somebody'd call a timeout and I'd go to David and say, David, you know, what do you have? You know, what's going on out there? And boy, oh boy, talk about being around a great athlete who is in touch with the game. That guy knew what was going on, and he would, you know, he didn't have a clipboard with all the different lines and colors that I had. And he'd come into the huddle and he'd say, this is what he's doing. This is what he's doing. That's what they're doing. Watch this guy. But this is what they're going to set. And at the end of the timeout, I'd say, okay, let's go. And, you know, and he'd go back out there on the court, and by golly, more often times than not, he was right. And now he's on the beach, and man, it's
still going.
He's a specimen. He's just fun to watch.
He is.
Cool. Vern, we have a couple listener questions for you to take us home. Tyler Hildebrand asks, what are your thoughts on human motivation, how it works, and how coaches or leaders can get the most out of their players?
That's a long question, Billy. I'm sorry you're going to have to ask me that again. And I'm not surprised that it's just a touch long-winded coming from, I think you said Tyler Hildebrand.
Yeah, we cut it down pretty.
Yeah.
it was another paragraph.
We love you, Tyler.
He wants to know about motivation. So let's say you don't have a gym full of John Mayers. How do you encourage and motivate your players?
Set that bar high and set the standard, put people in position to succeed and challenge the other players in the gym. And I use the ball as motivation, you know, put people in position in different situations to get the energy level up. Aside from this podcast, I'm not big on talking. I like to get in the gym and I less talk, more action, and, you know, get the ball going back and forth over the net and put people in a situation either where they're comfortable or where they're not comfortable. And that you'll be surprised at how the level of intensity comes up, because there's an expectation that other people in the gym are expecting. And if you use the ball to get that expectation to the level you want it, before you know it, you're going to get the ball rolling pretty quick.
Listener Bo Daniels asks, how did the events that have happened in your life lead you to your current place, Everest Base Camp?
Boy, I'm so lucky. All the events that have happened in my life, obviously there's more to it than luck. It's all been about the people. that I've had the opportunity and the honor and the pleasure of being around. And Bo, boy, you guys have some great listeners coming in here, because Bo is another one, another great human being who I had the pleasure of being in the gym with. And if, for me, everything that has led me to being at Mount Everest has come from the people and the greatness of being around these people that I've had the pleasure of working with throughout my time. And yeah, Bo, he's awesome, as well as everybody else that I've had the opportunity to be in the gym with. And no, it all culminates to this.
All right. So we got one more. It's from, I think he lives up in the hills of Malibu, Dr. Marv Dunphy. He actually sent me a long list of questions. I'll give you a couple. You can pass on any you want to. He first wanted to know if you ever slipped while weed whacking on his property. And if the answer is yes, did you save the machine? And did that work help prep you for Everest?
Two things. I might have slipped once, but nobody ever saw it. And
So it didn't happen.
But absolutely, if you slip, the machine gets saved first, and you might get a little cuts and bruise. But, that's character. A little cut or bruise is character. And did it help me train for Everest? I would say, yeah, it probably helped me train, but maybe not quite as much as the sand dune or the stairs out in back of Firestone Fieldhouse. Or Alumni Park, the hill there, or should I just keep going? Or how about the hill going up to the, if we needed a little extra cardio, there's a law school at Pepperdine. And the only time I ever saw that law school was with my head down, just trying to hoof it up that hill and not be last. All the above prepared me for Mount Everest.
And so Marv really saw ahead. He knew he wanted to really get you ready for Everest way back in 92.
Nice guy.
His next question was, what was his role on the 92 national championship team? Did the coach share that role with him?
My role on the 92 team, he never, he might have mentioned what my role was a couple of times. But my role was to get the most out of the first team I could with whatever means necessary. And you play different teams and you get different looks across the net, and you might hear different things from different benches. And each team was unique in the way they would cheer for their side of the net. And, in practice, it was, it was my job to help encourage our starting six so they were prepared for whatever situation they got in on the other side of the net. And that might have culminated into a little bit of, a higher stress level at some point.
I think I could picture that sort of encouragement, you say.
But it worked out.
It worked out. Let's see. He also asks, did he get good grades his freshman year? And what did the coach have to say about those grades?
Yeah, I had a pretty similar path as D-Raj, whereas – I knew where the classroom was. I just didn't, the class was flying at about 40,000 feet and I was hovering at about maybe 10 feet off the ground. And so there were a lot of things going over my head my freshman year. I came from a little town and I hadn't been anywhere and hadn't done anything. And still haven't been anywhere and done anything, but I figured out how to go to class after that first year. And, Marv brought me into his office, which can be great. But when he tells you to shut the door, he's either got a great secret or maybe he's got to talk to you about something else. And he brought me into his office and had me shut the door and then asked me for my dad's phone number. And so he then got my dad on the phone, and my dad said a few things about me and what we should do, what we should do in order to get me to study a little more. And Marv just said, "Hey, Mr. Vernovich, no problem. You know, I'm not going to kick him off the team and send him back home to Pennsylvania. I'm just going to break his arm so he can't play volleyball." And, you know, he'd never break my arms. But I'll tell you, later that year, I did get better grades.
All right. Last one from Marv. He says, "Was working at Marv's 5-day camps, all fun and games, sort of like vacation."
Man, it was a lot of fun. It was so much fun. It wasn't fun in games by any means. You want to talk about how and where I learned to set the bar high and to manage expectations and place accountability. Those camps were absolutely fantastic for the players. The kids who came to the camps, they were absolutely fantastic for the coaches, and the expectation that was set for the coaches to work at that camp was as far away from a trip to the amusement park as you could get. I mean, if you came to that camp thinking you were, you know, going to a little barbecue and you would wear your Hawaiian shirt, you couldn't be further from the truth. If you were going to work the Dumphy volleyball camp back in the day, you were working, and you were probably working, I don't know, maybe 16, 20 hour days. You might get a nap in, but hey, you got to be in the gym. You got to be in the gym with Harlan Cohen and get ready to do some setting drills. And whew, yeah. So yeah, it was a lot of fun, but I guess it was type 2 fun where you couldn't wait for it to be over. And then when it was over, you had to have amnesia because you were going to do it again. You knew you were going to do it again. You just needed to forget about what you went through.
I remember I was your like right-hand man. I'm sure you had like 10 of them, but Marv's like, "Yeah, whatever Vern needs, you do it." And I remember one year, I mean, we were doing night watch, we were doing, you know, Harlan stuff, just, you know, all day. And I think you gave me like 10 minutes to take a nap. And I think I fell asleep for 15, and I wake up and I wake up, you know, miss my alarm, and I come down and everyone's already on the field. I was like, "All right, how am I going to sneak down there without anybody seeing me?" So I went through the hill, like hiding behind bushes, like trying to slowly like make my way in. And then I kind of like roll up next to you, like pretending like I'd been there the whole time. And I think you're like, "I saw you up in the hill." Dang it,
man. You had to sneak it in. You know, by then you're big time by then, and yeah. you've been there and you've done that, but you're still feeling. I mean, you're not the only one who woke up every half hour, John, and I still do that. And I'm, you know, I have to get up again this morning or tomorrow morning at 2 a.m. and I can guarantee I'm going to wake up because I don't want to miss the call in from Everspace Camp. And it's life. And you guys have kids now, and I'll tell you, if your kid needs something in the middle of the night, I don't think you're just going to roll over and say, "Ah, they'll just stop crying in a minute and I can ignore it." You're going to bounce out of bed. You're going to run there. So, you know, all of that be early to be on time and all that learning you did at Pierce and then at Pepperdine. And yeah, I remember seeing you up on the hill. You were fast coming down the stairs and slipping through the weeds.
Oh, man.
Well, I swear, I don't think I would have ever had to worry about Billy being late.
No, Billy would have been on time. Yeah, it was me and D-Raj you had to worry about.
Every time.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Vern, what a life you've led. Just incredible to hear you open up and hear all these stories and hear all these lessons. And really thankful you shared and thankful for all that I've learned from you through the years. And I'm glad we did this. This is really cool to to go back and reflect. And I know we took a lot of your time and you got focused on Everest, but I'm really thankful that you did this and opened up.
Hey, I appreciate you having me on, and what an honor. Like I said, I went down through your Rolodex of podcasts and you've had every person on here. Wow, you've had some great people, and I have lived a pretty fortunate life so far, and I don't think it's over yet. I'm excited, you know, to see what's in front of me and what's coming, and I'm excited to see what's coming for you guys next. So Billy's writing books, and the AVP is coming back, and kids are going to be able to go to class again. Boy, we're all excited to get vaccinated and get back to what we love doing, which is being outside. I think all of us like being in the gym and being outside. Let's get back to it.
Let's do it. You fired me up. Yeah, I can't wait to see you. Continue with Everest, but back in the coaching world, it's going to be fun to have you back with us, hopefully soon.
Hey, I'm open to anything.